Hey guys, I'm Neeraj, and I've been working trying to understand the cool gases and galaxy halos with Anoop and Mike McCourt and also Socheng. So let's get started. So when you think of these galaxies, you might think of these beautiful disks containing over 100 billion stars. But in fact, that is just the tip of the iceberg. Galaxies are embedded inside a much larger structure, which we call a galaxy halo. So the gravity from the galaxy pulls in the gas from the surrounding space to fill up this gaseous halo. What's more is that the actual disk of stars and planets and everything that it contains forms from the gas inside this halo. So if you want to try and understand how the disk of the galaxy and all the stuff it contains forms, we need to understand the detailed properties of the gas inside this halo. So as it currently stands, we don't really know much about the gas in this halo, except for the fact that it must be extremely hot. Basically, what needs to happen is that if the gas exists, it must somehow balance its pressure. It must somehow balance the gravitational pull with pressure, because that's the only force it has access to. And equating gravity with pressure roughly sets the temperature of the gas to around 1,000,000 degrees. At a temperature of around 1,000,000 degrees, you don't have atoms anymore. Everything's totally ionized in this form of a plasma. And so since you don't have atoms, you don't have any atomic line transitions. And the way we primarily see things in astronomy is by atomic line transitions. So this gas is so hot that it's rendered basically invisible. So based on everything I've told you so far, if I give you a telescope, say, and tell you to point it at some galaxy halo somewhere, you would say it's invisible. You shouldn't be able to see anything. However, when observers actually do this, what they find is really surprising. From this observation by our very own Joe Hanavi, what he finds is he finds gas 100 times colder than what was previously predicted. Not only that, he finds this gas in pretty much every direction he looks, as shown here. For scale, this is the radius of the halo. So you can see, everywhere you look, you find this gas, which is totally unpredicted, 100 times colder than what anyone would have even expected. So this new discovery of cold gas automatically raises some strange questions, right? The model that we think is going on is we have this 1,000,000 degree hot halo of gas, and somehow, sort of in the middle of it, there's this gas 100 times colder. How are these two phases of gas coexisting? That's a weird thing on its own. But even weirder are what if we try and think about this in detail. So cooled gas, as it cools, becomes more dense. And we know that this 1,000,000 degree gas has to essentially be hot because it has to balance its pressure. So this cold, dense gas just doesn't have the pressure to support itself against gravity. So how do we see it in every direction we look and not sink right down through the center? So that's a problem on its own. But if we kind of forget about that second, and then imagine we have some cold gas. As the gas cools, it condenses into a really tiny volume. But observations see the fact that you see cold gas in every direction you look at. So how can this cold gas be so small in size, yet be in every direction you look, right? So just to kind of summarize, the problems that we're facing, the current models of galaxies, of galaxy formation is, how is this cold gas so dense, yet not sinking right down to the center of the galaxy? And how can this cold gas be so small in size, yet be in every direction we look when we look through telescopes? And ultimately, we need to understand the properties of these gases if we want to have a good theory of galaxy formation. So let's try and keep these problems in mind and about astrophysics in large-scale space, and let's come back down to Earth for a second. If I open a bottle of water and I just pour it on the floor, what happens? I create a big mess just because gravity makes all the water fall, and you know now the left makes says I'm in trouble. But really, if you've ever been out on a cloudy day, you've noticed that there are just tons and tons of water just suspended in the sky. So what's going on here? Why doesn't the cloud just come crashing right down to the ground? So the idea is that clouds aren't big, contiguous blobs of water just floating around in space. They're actually made of millions and millions of tiny little water droplets, each of which are so small that they're effectively able to just couple to the surrounding atmosphere. So even though the individual water droplets are much, much more dense than surrounding air, by being so small in size, they're effectively just floating and drifting along with the atmosphere. So let's sort of keep this in mind and come back to our first problem of how the cold gas can be so dense, but still support itself against its own weight. So just how a big blob of water would fall right down to the ground and make a big splash, we shouldn't be thinking of this cold just like that happens, if I imagine that as a big blob of gas, of cold gas sitting in space, we would also expect it to just crash down to the center. But however, if I just think of this blob of cold gas, much like a cloud, as a set of dispersed chunks, in the same way that the water droplets in clouds are able to float around in the surrounding atmosphere, breaking up this chunk of cold gas into lots of tiny chunks, these tiny chunks are sort of floating around in the ambient million-degree plasma. So thinking of cold gas in this way at least answers our first question of how this cold gas can be more dense than the surrounding hot gas and still support its own weight. But as an added bonus, this model also answers our second puzzle of how the cold gas can be small in size but be everywhere we look at. So let's imagine you give me, say, a certain mass of cold gas, and then I start breaking this mass up of cold gas into lots of tiny little chunks, and I spread them out in space. Right? The same mass that you give me now occupies a much larger area in the sky. So you can see this, that breaking up these cold gas into lots of tiny chunks answers both our puzzles at once. And so the observations are sort of telling us that cold gas in galaxies exists in this kind of cloudy, foggy form. That's the correct way to interpret our observations. That's what we're trying to get at here. So this is all well and good, but for example, what if, say, a cloud forms, a large cloud forms? Well, there must be some kind of physical process that converts any large sort of clumps of cold gas that might form quickly to a small gas. At least that's what should happen if what we're saying the correct way to interpret the observations is right. So what we try and do is we try and simulate these gases in a context that you might actually expect in an astrophysical environment. So what you're seeing here is a simulation that I've ran where the initial condition is what I'm showing here. There's a black beam. The color here roughly shows density. And you have a black beam of cold gas right down the middle. And on the top and the bottom, you have less dense hot gas. And the way I've set it up is this hot gas is blowing up past it. And so what I'm specifically interested in, how does this big black beam fragment? And first of all, let's see whether it does. So as I let the simulation evolve, so yeah, you can see exactly what happens. This big black beam that was really big initially fragmented into lots of tiny chunks, not unlike what you might see in a cloud, lots of tiny droplets floating around. So even in our simulations, we're sort of seeing that if I start off with some large cloud of gas, it quickly just kind of breaks up into lots of these tiny chunks. So we want to try and have a physical, like, what is the physics that's driving this thing, right? So the way we model these things is by looking, by understanding these things as fluids. We can sort of imagine a fluid and one region of it has a higher pressure than the other. Fluids don't like that. They like to be at the same pressure each everywhere. And the way they fix this is by emitting pressure waves, which are nothing but sound, between these two blobs. And so once the sound waves go from one blob to the other, they equalize the pressure. The idea here is that the sound, and basically sound and pressure waves in the fluid, is what transmits pressure, forces, and information. So if two regions of the fluid are separated by a distance much larger than the sound can go between them, they have no way of knowing about each other, let alone affecting each other. So now we can sort of come back to our initial cloud. Let's imagine our cloud is super big in the context that as it cools, sound doesn't reach from one side to the other. So different regions of the cloud are sort of causally disconnected from each other. So as the cloud cools, you have no way, the cloud has no way of contracting as a whole, because one side of it doesn't know about the other side. Rather, the cloud contracts in terms of its causally connected chunks, which we think are the regions that are causally connected, we think roughly correspond to the distance sound will travel within the time it takes for this gas to cool. So this model sort of predicts that our final state should be a set of chunks which all have a size roughly corresponding to the sizes of causally connected regions, which we think is what we call the CSD cool. So now we have a prediction. What I'm working on currently with Anoop and Mike is trying to go back to these simulations and see whether these simulations fit our model and predict that the scale of these clumps are CSD cool. And ultimately, we also want to go back to observations and check this idea. Thanks for listening, and thanks to Lev for organizing this. And also, awesome thank you, Mike and Noob, for all your support during this project. Thanks.
Just to clarify, do you have the hot gas and the cold gas, or did you predict the hot gas and then actually found the cold gas, or do they coexist?
So we think the hot gas is there. It's kind of hard to measure for galaxies just for the reason I told you, but we think it's there just because gas should be hot if it has to exist there. What was the surprising bit is that we found the cold gas. You know, we had no reason to predict the cold gas because, like I said, if the gas had to be there, it must be hot if it supports itself. You know, so cold gas should sink, and it doesn't.
But you found both, do they coexist? So is there hot and cold gas?
We think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That was basically my question. I guess to add on, I'm wondering, like, are there any sort of existing observational methods to determine that there actually is hot gas there, or is that like just like a purely theoretical, like based on theoretical arguments that it should be there?
Detecting hot gas in galaxies is kind of hard just because they're relatively small compared to other things, which Anoop will be talking about right afterwards. So if you can imagine sort of making this bigger, and making it bigger makes the gravity deeper, and makes the gas need to be hotter. And so if you make it slightly hotter, they emit what's called Bremsstrahlung, which makes it slightly easier to see. And so you can kind of extrapolate backwards, like, well, there's no reason to expect that it's not there if I reduce the mass. But it's kind of hard to observe just because it's very faint.
So do you anticipate an equilibrium between the cold and the hot? Like after a long enough time scale, there will be a certain amount, like an average of cold gas? Or do you think maybe it might decay over a long enough time?
So I think observationally, we think there should be an equilibrium. Just because we see this discovery, basically all galaxies across all however long they formed and however far we look. So there must be some process that kind of in nature just kind of equilibrates these things, right? Whether we see it in our simulations or not, that's a different thing.
So what is it that necessitates that there's like hot gas specifically that's not dark matter? Is there a reason you know that it's hot gas and not like a dark matter halo that's doing this?
So there's also a dark matter halo, okay? Dark matter is just this gravitationally interacting thing. That doesn't really have a temperature, right? Because it doesn't collide and it doesn't bump around and so on. So saying the temperature of a dark matter halo is kind of weird. What we think is going on is this: we have this dark matter that's created this gravitational well. Stuff falls into the gravitational well and gets heated up, because you can sort of roughly think of it as its gravitational energy being converted into kinetic energy. And that determines the fact that the gas has to be really hot. Does that sort of make sense, sir?
So what's a typical length scale for the interactions between particles in here, like for instance a mean free path or something along those lines?
The mean free path are drastically different from the hot and cold gas, just because they're, you know, these have different densities by a factor of 100.
Okay.
And so realistically, what we expect is, so these tiny clouds, I don't think I've emphasized, are extremely tiny. So the mean free path in the hot gas is roughly comparable to the size of a blob, of one of these cold gas blobs.
Okay.
So I think in terms of numbers, it's like around 0.1, or like, you can think of it as 0.1-ish light years. That's one of these small clumps. But really, we're talking about something that's like 10,000 times bigger.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. OK, let's thank you.